Going Linux, episode 200, Linux in Review, 2012. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, a review of Linux in 2012.
Whether you've just heard of Linux or are already an expert, here's your chance to learn more about it at Scale 11X, the Southern California Linux Expo. In 2013, Scale turns it up to 11 on its 11th anniversary. To celebrate, Scale will host tracks for cloud and virtualization, kernel development, beginner training, and much more, to a schedule that includes over 80 speakers covering the latest topics in open source software. The expo floor has grown to almost 100 exhibitors with both commercial and nonprofit organizations, as well as various open source projects showing products and software. Friday's special sessions return too. On Friday, attendees can choose from sessions like Build a Cloud Day, DevOps, Fedora Activity Day, UbuCon, PostgreSQL, FOSS Mentoring, or in-depth tutorials for Linux professionals. The Southern California Linux Expo will be held February 22nd, 23rd, and 24th at the Hilton Los Angeles Airport Hotel. For more information, discount information, or to register for the expo, visit SoCalLinuxExpo.org. We'll see you at Scale 11X.
Okay, I just wanted to let everybody know that Tom has taken out all the bolts from his engines and they have fallen to earth and he won't be on today.
That's right. He has crashed his system somehow. He's not even on Skype, so we can't even get a hold of him. Strange things. Tom, put the bolt back in.
But that just gives me plenty of time to make fun of him, so it's all good.
Well, here's hoping things get better for you, Tom, we'll talk to you next episode.
I was reading our friend Goog, and I was just kind of looking, and guess what, Larry? Linux pros make more money.
Oh, wow. So you got a raise this year?
No, I didn't get a raise. But if you look in the show notes, you'll see where this article come from, PCWorld.com, and you can kind of read the ins and outs. And I'm just saying this, if anybody is looking for an inept IT person who can break anything, I am your man. I will do it for cheap. Okay.
Yeah, I think as IT professionals go, neither one of us works regularly in Linux from a professional perspective. Perhaps you do a little bit more than me, but you know, for those of us in IT who are fortunate enough to be able to work with Linux every day, it looks from this article like in 2012, the average increase in salaries, and I'm guessing that this is probably in the U.S., although I don't really see anything that specifically says that, for 2012 was about 5% as an average salary increase over the last 3 years, it actually says, not just for 2012. But it also says for those professionals who regularly work in Linux, they got 9% on average. So that isn't bad.
Larry, you're not paying me enough. You only gave me a 1% retroactive back to 2016.
Well, just like last year, I'll pay you twice as much this year as I did the year before. How's that?
Okay, works for me.
Okay. If you do the math, that actually works out to be three times as much as well, or even half as much. It works out the same.
You are generosity incarnate.
It's all math, you know.
Guys, the census is our 200th episode, and we really just wanted to talk about what's been going on. I mean, every time we turn around, Mint's doing something really spectacular, or Ubuntu's doing something that's not so spectacular. Well, we've had an interview with John O'Bake and everything. I thought we'd just kind of sit back and just, you know, for our 200th, and just kind of chat and see what was going on. This, you're not going to get any tips. We're going to save that for our listeners' feedback. Please feel free to flame Tom. He is not here. But Larry, kind of give an overview of what we're trying to accomplish on this one.
Sure. Okay, so let's take a look at maybe some Linux distributions and what's happened with Linux distributions in general. Maybe we can take a look at what's happened on our podcast here in 2012. What's happened on the internet as relates to Linux in general. You know, I'm not sure we're going to get into any great depth here, but maybe, as you said, we can have just kind of a general reminiscence of a few things that we remember fondly or not so fondly about 2012.
Well, you know, Linux has just kind of blown up this past year. You know, every time I turn around, companies are going to Linux. We've had companies buy other companies and then decide that they want to continue on with the free version of the product. So with that, let's get into it.
Okay, sounds good. So, yeah, you're right. Linux seems to have blossomed this year. And, every year there's, is this going to be the year of the Linux desktop? And I've heard it said that we'll not really know that it's the year of the desktop while we're in it. It's only in hindsight that we'll be able to tell. And I think that's right. But I think 2012 may have been the watershed year where things turned around for Linux. I think that with the advent of the previous advent of Windows Vista and the debacle that became, and Windows 7 becoming a much better operating system as a result, during that lag between the introduction of Windows Vista and Windows 7, Linux gained some ground. But in 2012, with the release of Windows 8, and especially with the release of the actual laptops and desktops and computer hardware in general that had Windows 8 pre-installed, the aftermath that I've seen of that, especially with people trying to adopt Windows 8, I think Linux has made some great strides again, as a result of folks not taking well to those major changes in the desktop environment in the Windows world.
Well, you know, I was watching a YouTube a video on Ubuntu. I just had to throw that in there. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about this third world inventor that they had brought over to MIT, and he was just looking at the different computers, and I just so happened to see that he was just fascinated with, guess what, an Ubuntu Linux box.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there going, awesome. So it looks like MIT has a few of those boxes out there that they're, but the kid who, where he lives, has no computers, no electricity. I mean, this is really, really a third world, you're lucky if you can eat every day, yeah, type of thing. And he was using, he was just fascinating at the power of the Linux box. So it's good to see that it's making its way into schools. I've heard of other schools and municipalities who have switched to Linux with great effect. So I think the future for Linux is going to be bright.
I would agree with that. I think that's a very good reflection of where Linux is going. One of the things we could talk about here is the Linux distributions themselves. A lot has gone on with Linux distributions, and we'll have a link in the show notes to a timeline that we've had in past shows, but it's been updated recently to include 2012. And it takes a look at the Linux distributions and where they have been, where they've come from. And the thing over the past, the diagram itself over the past few years has increased in size. It's amazing how many Linux distributions are out there. When you talk about Linux and freedom of choice in Linux, there certainly are a lot of choices out there. It's going to be difficult as a new Linux user to pick one that's going to be the right choice for you. There are just so many out there.
Okay, so with that said, we're going to let you start off with your favorite Linux and give us an overview of how that project has gone this year, Larry.
Oh, you're talking about Tiny Core Linux? Actually, no.
Is it still around?
It is. It is. And they're going strong, but okay. That's not my favorite Linux distribution.
It starts with a mint or something.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And I've used all kinds of flavors of mint, you know, peppermint and spearmint and all of those. But Linux Mint has become my favorite distribution. It was introduced in about 2009. Excuse me, wait a minute. That was Mint Debian. Let me back up a second. I'm looking at the timeline here and getting things all mixed up. Linux Mint Debian is 2009. Where's Linux Mint on this diagram?
You know, while you're looking for that, I just have to say I like Mint a lot. Clem does a great job. He seems like a nice guy, but he works awful hard.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, he's got a few people helping him now, but he's... you know, it's a small distribution in terms of the amount of support that it has, physical human beings working on it, but they do an excellent job, that's for sure.
Well, if you think he's small, just go look at his donations page, and year after year, he makes more and more because people love this thing, and so they're actually bringing on more developers, and they're able to work full time on this. So, I mean, it just goes to show you that Mint is scratching the need of people who want it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Mint started about 2006, and I didn't start using it right away. I was using Ubuntu at the time. And as things changed with Ubuntu, I started migrating a little bit more to Mint, primarily because I'm lazy. and Mint has all of the codecs already pre-installed that I always would install when I installed Ubuntu from scratch. So I thought to myself, well, if Mint already has it, why am I doing this? And if I really want Mint to look like Ubuntu, I can do that. Well, and that was true until you had Unity. But even today, you can, I think you can add Unity to Mint. I've never tried it. It's not something that is something I would want to do, but I would suspect that that would be something you could do.
But why would you? They have Cinnamon, which everybody's raving about.
Yeah.
They have, I call it Mate, but some people call it Mate.
Mm-hmm.
They've got... someone told me they're working on something else. I mean, yeah. These guys have got their fingers in everything.
Right. And with Cinnamon, it started off as a pretty bare bones desktop environment, but and it was built on GNOME 3.
Mm-hmm.
And they took a lot of the GNOME 3 things and started building some Mint things around it and optimizing it for Cinnamon. And up until version 14, which is what we're currently on, they've been borrowing a lot of the GNOME utilities and GNOME setup. And I understand a lot of that in the control panel and a lot of other utility type things will be cinnamonized or mintified for the next release. And from what I read in the forum and in their community site, it looks like the control panel and the settings will be all unified under a single location. And I'm presuming that will be the Cinnamon settings as opposed to a setting that's for Cinnamon and another set of settings that are for the GNOME legacy stuff. So I really like Cinnamon a lot. That's my main, that's the desktop environment I have on my main machine. My wife's machine is using Mate, and she's using the long-term support release of Mint. So the 13 is what she's on, and she likes that a lot. And my my little server that I use for maintaining my significantly large network-attached storage device is running Mint XFCE. So it's almost all Mint here. And I actually, on my work laptop, I have an SD card that is running Mint 14 with Mate as well. And I, you know, when I want to boot into Mint, I boot into that SD card. And I've noticed just recently that instead of having to use a persistent image like you would for a persistent USB stick or something like that, which is the way I've had to run off of that SD card in the past. With the latest Mint installation with Mate on there that I just put on because I borked it.
No.
With an SD card, that's not difficult. But I reinstalled and I was able to install it to the SD card as though the SD card were a hard drive. That's the first time I've been able to do that. Perhaps it's been there and I've just missed it. But I was pretty impressed that it would install to the SD card as though it were a hard drive. And it's an 8 gig SD card, so I don't have a lot of room on there. But I've taken a lot of what I've learned from setting up an SSD to apply it to this SD card, which is essentially solid-state memory again, and reduce the amount of swappiness so it's not swapping as much, and have it record temp files to RAM so it's not recording it to the SD card, and a lot of the same sort of things. And it's working just fine. To record Audacity is a bit of a challenge because there's not enough space on that SD card to record any more than about an hour's worth of audio. And that's on the hairy edge, you know, for our 30 or 40 minute recordings, it takes about an hour's worth of stuff. And if we go longer than that, I'll just run out of space. So I'm not trying to do any recording off the SD card. But for short things, I might just do that.
Well, you know, the last caveat about Linux Mint is when it first came out, everybody's saying, oh, it's just a glorified Ubuntu. But we really, as much as they've progressed and they've done their own thing, that no longer applies.
Yeah, they've definitely come out into their own. They have their own utilities. They have their own way of doing some things. And they're headed in the right direction, that's for sure.
Well, I'm just going to make, this is just an honorable mention. The Solus OS is one of the new kids on the block. I don't know very much about it. I know that there's a lot of people that are excited about it. I also heard that one of the Mint developers is behind it. Other than that, I don't know too much about it, but I would encourage everybody just to keep an eye on it and see where it goes. Now, moving right along, I would like to say, okay, Larry's a fanboy of Linux Mint. I'm a fanboy of... Actually, I have two distributions I'm a big fanboy. The first
one... You can narrow it down to two? You distro hopper, you.
Yes, I can. The first one is Ubuntu. Yes, I know. I've drunk the Jono Kool-Aid, and I just can't get it out of my system. Ubuntu's been busy this year. They have tried this Amazon revenue sharing to, I will say, not stellar reviews, but I think most people have come to realize it's not evil. We had an interview with Jono, and just kind of thinking back about what he said, Larry, what do you think 2012 turned out to be? He had a lot of thoughts about what was going to happen. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, of course, the interview you did with him was well before they introduced the Ubuntu phone operating system.
Yes.
But I think that is probably one of the most significant advancements. I think Ubuntu, although I don't use them on a regular basis anymore, primarily because, as I said, I'm lazy and I like everything set up for me, they are definitely headed in the right direction. And I think Ubuntu is probably the future of Linux. Maybe I'll get some hate mail for that. But the reason I say that is because, and I've said this before, I see them taking Linux and the Linux desktop in particular in a direction that is very different from other Linux distributions. It's different from the way Apple is going with the Mac, and it's different from the way, kind of opposite of what Microsoft is doing. Microsoft in particular is looking to have a single desktop type environment across multiple platforms. In other words, they're having the same look and feel without having the same base operating system on a phone, on a tablet, and on a computer. So it looks the same, but it's not the same. It's an illusion, if you will. Whereas Ubuntu is going in the opposite direction. They're going in the direction of a single operating system that has a desktop that adapts itself to its environment, adapts itself to the hardware that it's on. So it is a single operating system that looks like a phone when it's installed on a phone, looks like a computer when it's installed on a computer, and will look like a tablet when it's installed on a tablet. And I think that is definitely the right way to go.
Well, I like to say one interface to rule them all.
Yeah, but the interface adapts itself.
Yes, it adapts itself, but if you really look at it, Ubuntu does have, I mean, you can look at the Ubuntu phone. Hold on a minute. John O'Bacon, I want my phone. Okay. Sorry. Mark Shuttleworth, send me my phone. Okay, I need it. Anyway.
I don't know whether those kind of please work, you know.
Please? I'll wash your Mercedes. What do you want? I'll even come to the Island of Man if that makes you happy. Okay, anyway. The interface is, you know, they do share elements. So, you know, we can banner on about Ubuntu, but I will have to say, let's keep an eye on it for 2013 and see where they go. Okay, there's some more distributions, and I think, Larry, since you're the resident old person here.
Well, thanks.
I live to serve, you know, minions. Why don't you give the next one like I call the grandfather of Linux? Who is that?
That would be Slackware. No, seriously, although in the show notes you have Debian. Debian certainly has a lot of branches and distribution. It's been around a long time, but I think Slackware is probably the one that is the oldest and the one that has you know, been around the longest for sure. It came out of something called SLS, and you know, it's really gotten to the point where there are so many things developed from a Slackware branch that it might not even be easy to figure them all out. You know, very early on, coming out of Slackware was SUSE Linux. Let's see, more recently, in more recent times, we've had a lot of distributions come out of Slackware, like Stux and, oh, some things that folks might actually recognize. I'm actually going off of some of the diagram here itself. There's KateOS, there's ZenWalk. That's one that's gotten a lot of publicity fairly recently. Let's see, lots and lots of things out of Slackware. Debian is also probably number two, and Red Hat would be number three. But Debian definitely has the widest. If you take a look at the diagram that we started as our first reference, and the width of the distributions that have come out of Debian, although it's not been around as long as Slackware, it has many, many, many more distributions that are currently live and that have been around and are no longer around than Red Hat, than Slackware, the other two main branches of this tree. And, of course, Ubuntu is but one of those that has its own set of branches that come out of it. And its derivatives are probably as wide as the Slackware derivatives, just Ubuntu on its own. But without looking at the Ubuntu derivatives, we have Linux Mint Debian as one that's come out of Debian directly, Migo. Canopix is another one that has come out of that. Some utilities that have come out of Canopix. But before we even go in there, Clonezilla Live directly from Ubuntu. But Canopix itself is one that has had a lot of utility-type distributions that have come out of it. Of course, it's one of the first, if not the first, live distribution or live CD distributions out there. We've got DAM Vulnerable Linux. We've got DSL, DAM Small Linux, Knop Myth, the Mythbuntu sort of distribution for Myth boxes. Let's see, Dream Linux came out of the branch from Canopix. And many, many more there as well. So Debian is definitely one of those distributions that has been a source of derivatives and continues to be so. If you want to develop a derivative, Debian seems to be the one that's the most popular right now to develop your derivatives from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that if you're going to start with Linux, then you should stay with some of the Debian until you get more comfortable.
Right. It certainly has, with the breadth of derivatives, it certainly has the most support and the most, if the derivatives themselves are any indication, the most contribution back to its development. Yeah, it's a good place to start. That's not to take anything away from the Slackware derivatives or the Red Hat derivatives, but Debian certainly has the broadest base, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, another distribution that has been in the news earlier this year was OpenSUSE.
Yeah, that was my first... well, maybe not my first, but the first Linux distribution they actually used as opposed to experimented with. And you're right. They were bought out by Novell originally, and then just recently they were purchased by Attachmate. So not a household name, but yeah. So,
well, you know, they were very cool about their they're letting them have their autonomy to continue developing OpenSUSE. So you really
that was good news.
give them much grief about it, but I have noticed that OpenSUSE has been slipping a little bit on their releases, but I think they're talking about going to an 8-month release cycle, because it's just 6 months, as they say, is just too fast.
And those additional 2 months are going to make all the difference, I'm sure.
Sarcasm.
Yes, well, but, you know, I can understand that as a user of Linux to keep up with a 6-month release cycle with Ubuntu and Mint is a bit daunting. But again, unless you need or want to keep up with it, you don't have to do that, at least with Ubuntu's model, which is to have a long-term support release that you can rely on being stable as you go forward. So I think that might be a model that others could share, but SUSE, they've gone to, or Attachmate, I guess, they've gone to this 8-month release cycle, and good luck to them.
Yeah, here's a question for you. Is Mandriva dead?
You certainly haven't heard a lot from it, that's for sure. That's one of those that have forked out of the Red Hat branch. And, you know, it was originally Mandrake and then a few other things, and Mangia and Mandriva. And I don't know. That's yet to be determined. Last I heard, and this is, you know, from other news reports on other podcasts, but I think they got some funding to keep going. They're keeping going, but since then I haven't heard anything in the way of releases or anything in the way of news. It's possible that I've missed it and it's happened, but it's certainly been quiet.
Well, I will say that they're moving right up in the top 10. The Mandria, the fork from Mandrake, Mandriva is the fork from Mandriva. I think I said that right. Anyway,
you said Mandriva is the fork from Mandriva,
the Mangia is the fork from Mandriva.
Right.
And they're doing very well. I'm not particularly a fan of them. I played with them a little bit. Okay, and just so I'm switching gears, because I have to call out Fedora. Spherical Cow? Really? You can't think of like the like super awesome Fedora. We're going to take over the world and make your life wonderful and fix you free lattes. You come up with Spherical Cow. Okay? Just pointing this out.
Well, it was Beefy Miracle before that, you know?
Yeah, and you know what they gave out? Hot dogs.
Yeah.
Were they even good hot dogs?
I don't know. Are they giving out cows this year?
I'll make my own hot dogs then. But no, right, guys, well, we love you very much. If we both agree, if it wasn't Fedora pushing the envelope, a lot of this stuff would not get pushed down to Ubuntu and Mint and Slackware and all these other, OpenSUSE and Debian. So, but I do have to give a shout out to my buddies over at PC Linux OS. Yes, I snuck this one in as my chief executive minion's prerogative. And all I got to say is, hey, Techstar and crew, keep up the good work.
Yes. I got a few little hip pocket favorites as well, but that'll be for another time, I'm sure.
Hey, wait a minute. Did you put Android in this thing?
I did not. But yeah, let's talk about it. It's a Linux sort of thing, Linux-y thing. It's got a Linux kernel. You know, you wouldn't recognize the desktop environment as Linux, but that's part of the attraction. And it's of course the operating system that works on phones and tablets and those kinds of things. And it was originated by Google And they took the Linux kernel and consulted with Ubuntu and did a whole bunch of research and then ended up coming out with something that's completely different, specifically designed for their devices. Those devices, the tablets and phones, and now there is Android for your desktop computer as well. So, hey, it's come full circle.
Now, you're going to rip my hands off my Linux machine before you put Android on it. Oh, I'm sorry. That was out loud. No, Android's fine. It's a great operating system for phones and tablets. My Nook runs Android. And I just want to say, Barnes & Noble, would you please let me root this sucker? Okay, thank you. Okay, because I would really like to have the latest and greatest. But you know, no podcast is here by ourselves. We have other friends that do podcasts, and I thought it'd be a great time in 2012 just to kind of say thank you, because you know some of them have mentioned us, and some of us have helped each other out. So the first one I would like to say is Podnuts. That's our buddy with Steve McLaughlin, and he set up our forums this past year.
Yeah,
and they've come in quite handy. And I think you named him our chief executive henchman. So.
Yes, that's exactly right, chief executive henchman. He doesn't appear on the podcast, or hasn't yet. I'd love to have him as a guest, but definitely he's out there, and everyone that helps with the Podnuts community out there, and you know there are a number of other podcasts that Steve appears on, so I'm not going to be mentioning all of them, but that's certainly one. And he's kind of ubiquitous in the Linux community. Another one that's ubiquitous is Nightwise, and Nightwise has appeared on our podcast. We've appeared on his and the Nasillacast podcast, although that's Mac oriented. He's appeared on there as well. And I've appeared on the Nasillacast too to talk about Linux, but. You know, Nightwise is one of those that is a cross-platform slider. He doesn't care which operating system he uses. As long as it works for him, he's good with it. So he'll use the Apple operating system or the Microsoft operating system or the Linux operating system without missing a beat. Mintcast, another one that's out there. And they've gone from being focused on Mint to being focused on Linux, and they'll talk about Mint. They're another good podcast about Linux, especially for new listeners, although they get into some deep topics there as well. What do you listen to?
I listen to, do not laugh. I listen to the Linux Action Show.
Hey, I listen to that too.
I listen to TLTS.
Mm-hmm.
I love those guys. I love all the editing. They're great guys, Dan and Gorkon and Pegwell and all them. I mean, you just never know what you're going to get. Sometimes you listen to the whole show and there is no Linux talk whatsoever, but it's still the most entertaining thing I've out there.
Yeah.
And I've listened to Linux in a Ham Shack, and I officially want to let you know I broke your badger. I am in the process of tracking down another one, and as soon as I get it, I'll send it to you.
Well, thanks for the loan. I'm sorry Bill broke it, but it was getting a little bit scummy too. So we broke it while we were trying to wash it and clean it up, get all that slime off of it, and it just broke. So we apologize. We'll get you a new one, and we'll send that to you.
It's Larry's fault because he made me use Tide on the Badger, and it just disappeared. I did the general cycle. What do you want?
Yeah, well, it was a spin drying that broke it. So, yeah, like I said, we'll replace it for you.
You know, another thing that I don't know if you have. I don't have hardly any experience with it, but maybe you do. How about the Raspberry Pi? What do you know about that?
Yeah, let's talk about hardware here for a minute. Yeah, so Raspberry Pi, I haven't used it, but I've heard a lot about it. And it's a 2012 thing for sure. It came into its own in 2012, the little device that's a $25 or $35 computer on a chip. Well, not quite on a chip, on a board, about the size of an Altoids tin. And, you know, it's developed into an industry on its own. They have some specific ports of Linux to run on this ARM chip that's on the Raspberry Pi. So they have Raspbian and other specifically designed.
They have a Fedora too.
Yes, they do. So tremendous work on their part, and you know, just a fabulous little device for education. And I suspect that it's going to be used in other things. I think being so small, having a full computer on a very tiny board, it will end up being incorporated into other hardware devices. And I saw a device that Dell is now distributing that is a little bigger than a power brick for a laptop. And apparently it's a full computer, and I wouldn't be surprised if it either has a Raspberry Pi in there or Dell has developed some things that are very similar to what's done with the Raspberry Pi. So 2012 hardware for Linux, phenomenal.
You know, we are really thankful. If you get nothing out of this, we just want to say we're really thankful for everybody who contributes, everybody who listens to our podcast. But in hindsight, it, you know, Linux is not static. It's about you.
Yeah, and although, you know, there are some specific branches of Linux and some specific development trees, if you will, Linux is Linux, and all of the distributions share in the development efforts of everyone else, because from a kernel perspective, it all goes back to the Linux kernel, and a lot of the tools and utilities that are developed from the from the Red Hat branch get used in the Debian branch and vice versa, and the Slackware branch. All of the goodness that is Linux is shared amongst the community, because that's just the way it's developed. Thousands and thousands of people are developing Linux on a daily basis, not just through 2012, but from every year since, you know, Linux was invented. And you know, it's one of those things that's hard to describe to someone who has come from the proprietary software world, particularly from one dominated by Windows and Microsoft, and just the idea that you don't have a core team of developers working in isolation, developing something that they feel is best. And they might consult with their users from time to time to try to figure out, are they going in the right direction? But with Linux, it's always a community effort. And that's one of the reasons why it is such a superior operating system in many, many ways. You know, it's got its quirks and its holes and its downsides, but I think it's like cockroaches. It's here for the long term, and after everything else has failed, Linux will still be around.
But we still have one of the best rock stars out there. Go Linus. And that was awesome when you flipped off NVIDIA. Way to go, buddy. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, and one last thing, just some developments on our side from 2012. No major website redesign or main direction, you know, changes in direction for the podcast, although we did kind of veer off into the Windows bashing world. But we're back to for the most part, talking about practical advice on how to use Linux and how to improve your proficiency with using Linux. We continue with that. And in that vein, we're starting up development of new videos and video tutorials. We added one just recently on some advanced topics in using Audacity for editing. You'll probably want to take a look at that if you're into podcasting at all. And I've actually gone and remastered some of the videos that were there before. Many of them were very fuzzy quality, and that was a result of my lack of skill in using the video editing software that's available for Linux and just lack of experience in doing video at all. But now that I've learned a lot more about videos, I've gone back to the as close to the original recording as possible as I could find in the old files and tried to improve the quality. And for the most part, I was able to improve the video quality significantly. And over the past couple of years, browser technology has improved to the point where video can be displayed in most browsers using HTML5, that standard, as opposed to having to rely on Flash or JavaScript to put video in your web page. And so what I've done is I've changed our videos on our website so that we only have one version available for download. And that version is the AUG version, the AUG video version, AUG Theora. So if you want to download that and you want to play it on Windows, you're going to have to use something like the VLC player, because Windows doesn't play AUG out of the box in the Windows Media Player. But fortunately, there are things like VLC out there that do play it. And since these files are a little bit bigger than they were before, and that's a reflection of the improved quality, in addition to being able to download the AUG file directly, the OGV file, from our website, you can download it in torrent format. And all of that, of course, is thanks to the Internet Archive, that when you put your videos and audio files on their site, they automatically create some derivative formats, and the torrent for videos is one of those that comes out of their storage system and their software there. So we appreciate their service and what they've been able to do for storing our audio and video. So thanks to the Internet Archive. I think we're at about the point where we need to wrap up. What do you think?
Just one last note to Tom. Put the bolts back in the engine.
Hopefully you'll be able to get it started again. So until our next episode, which is listener feedback, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use the forums to leave the topic suggestions in the thread labeled Topic Suggestions at forum.goinglinux.com.
If you want to support our efforts, click the Donate button while you're there. You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail line is +1-904-468-7889.
Follow our show updates on Twitter, Twitter us at Going Linux, or join our Google Plus community. Look for Going Linux Podcast.
You can download the episodes from our website, or you can play them right from the show notes page. Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
New music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.